Think back to the last time you started a job and had to sign a contract. How closely did you read what you were signing? The contract might have contained something called a non-compete agreement. Companies use these agreements to stop workers from leaving one job and taking confidential information to a rival. Our colleague Lauren Weber covers workplace issues. Have you ever had an employer try to put a non-compete on you in your employment contract?
You know, the scary thing is I don't even know, because this is what happens with a lot of workers. You go in on the first day of work, you're handed a bunch of paperwork by your HR representative, and often we sign things without reading through the whole thing, reading the fine print. So I frankly don't even know the answer to that.
I agree with you. I can't say for sure.
You know, I've gotten proprietary training that the journal has provided that I could go and share at other places, but it's not common in journalism, and I'm grateful for that.
Let's not give our employer any ideas.
True.
Non-compete agreements affect a lot of people. The Federal Trade Commission says that as many as 1 in 5 workers has one. And studies show they can have a negative impact on employees by locking them into jobs and suppressing their wages. Last week, the FTC said it wanted to ban non-competes and proposed making them illegal in almost all cases. Welcome to The Journal, our show about money, business, and power. I'm Ryan Knudsen. It's Friday, January 13th. Coming up on the show, the hidden impact of non-compete agreements on the American economy.
This episode is brought to you by Vonage. With Vonage Video API, your developers can easily create custom video experiences tailored to your business. Enhance every conversation with live video. Whether it's delivering faster tech support, improving customer service, or enabling interactive meetings and events. Unlock the true video potential of your business. Discover how at Vonage.com.
Where did the idea of non-compete agreements come from?
For the most part, early on, these applied mostly to people who really did have a lot of access to what would be considered confidential information. So top executives, salespeople, scientists who might be working on a proprietary formula or, you know, some technical information. Like a classic example, and I don't even know if Coke imposes these clauses. I imagine they do with anybody who has access to the secret formula of Coca-Cola. But I think that would be the kind of, you know, classic example where there's a secret formula and you don't want someone taking that formula to Pepsi or to another soft drink company or starting their own company making sodas.
Non-competes usually apply for a certain period of time, like a year or two, and can cover a certain geographic area. Over the last few decades, non-competes have expanded way beyond the top of the corporate ladder. Now, companies impose them on millions of rank-and-file workers, as many as 30 million people, according to the Federal Trade Commission.
Baristas at coffee houses, sandwich makers, hairstylists, factory workers. So they've been applied to more and more people. I've asked attorneys and academics who study these, you know, why did that happen? And it's hard for people to know exactly why or how, but one theory is that it was the internet that made these just much easier to apply. You could, you know, any business owner or employment attorney could go online, find a template, cut and paste it into an employment contract.
Sort of like, well, we can throw it in. Why not just do it?
Right. And for employers, for a long time, there was very little pushback on that. And even now, there's often very little pushback because A, a lot of people don't read the fine print on their employment agreements. B, often, you know, for many people, you're signing that paperwork on the first day of the job. You might have quit a previous job in order to take this job. You don't necessarily have a lot of recourse to suddenly be like, oh, I have a problem with this. The vast majority of workers won't challenge a non-compete. you know, they don't have the resources for it, or they don't understand that they can challenge whether or not an agreement is reasonable.
How do companies enforce non-compete agreements?
Well, often it happens when someone quits their job. Non-competes generally apply even if the person is fired and takes a job somewhere else. You know, in maybe the word gets back to the company that this happened, or they see it on a person's LinkedIn profile, or, you know, maybe when the person gives notice, they tell their manager, oh yeah, I got another job offer at this other place. And at that point, a company can send a warning letter to somebody saying, you can't take that job because you signed this non-compete with us. Or in some cases, they'll say, you can get out of this non-compete clause by paying us, you know, some sum of money.
Like how much money?
I've seen ones where somebody was told, you owe us $100,000 to get out of this non-compete. You know, so that's obviously like unreasonable for a lot of people. In some cases, if a warning letter doesn't scare somebody from taking a new job, a company can actually sue the employee.
And do companies actually do this? Where they actually go after their former employees?
They really do. And it's not just high-profile companies or high-profile executives and individuals. I interviewed somebody who was a security officer. When he quit the job and went somewhere else, his former employer came after him and sued him. He eventually had to file for bankruptcy.
Huh. What was the argument for why a security guard can't take another security guard job?
I spoke to the lawyer for the company that tried to enforce this and came after him. They said that during a few weeks of training for the job, he was exposed to proprietary information, including training methods and customer information.
How unusual is what happened to that security guard?
Well, you know, it's kind of hard to say because I think the cases that actually do come forward are the tip of the iceberg.
Holly Hightrader signed a non-compete agreement when she started a job as a part-time massage therapist at a spa in Iowa in 2017.
It looked like it was kind of like copied, you know, just general non-compete jargon. What stood out to me the most was you couldn't compete within a 30-mile radius of her salon. And if you were to quit, it was 30 miles for up to a year.
And what did you think when you first saw this non-compete agreement?
At first, I was a little hesitant. Even my husband was like, are you sure you want to sign that? You know, and I thought, oh, you know, what's the big deal? I was like, it's Northwest Iowa. Where am I going to go?
In the end, Holly signed it. She worked there for about 5 years, but says the working conditions changed over time. So she decided to quit. And about a month after leaving, she started practicing massage therapy on her own. When her former employer found out, she took Holly to court and tried to get her to stop.
When she filed that temporary injunction, yeah, there was like some anxiety about what I had done. Maybe I should have just chilled out and hung back for a little bit. It was a big headache. I mean, it was an expensive headache because, you know, just because I'm married and I have kids, and that's the last thing you want to do is waste money on a lawyer.
The judge sided with Holly. In court documents, the judge wrote that the non-compete was unfairly stopping her from providing for her family. The ruling also said Holly's independent massage services weren't an actual threat to the spa's business. We spoke to Holly's former boss, and she told us her lawyer would give us a call, but the lawyer never reached out. Would you ever sign a non-compete agreement again?
Absolutely not. I wish that all schools, everybody was taught never to sign a non-compete.
Why not?
Because you're worth so much more. I feel like employers almost have like a hold on you, like they can just do whatever they want because they have that little non-compete paper hanging in front of you. And it's like, no, you don't own me.
Now, the federal government wants to change the system. The FTC says that non-competes don't only affect the workers who sign them. The agency says that because these clauses are in some people's contracts, everyone is making less money. That's next.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. If you're like most people, you've had your fair share of financial questions. Questions like, will you be able to afford a third kid? Will you be able to do everything you want when you retire? What if you outlive your savings? Empower knows these questions can be stressful, so they're here to help answer your what-ifs and empower what's next. Join 18 million Americans and take control of your financial future. Tap the banner to learn more or visit empower.com.
This episode is brought to you by Vonage. With Vonage Video API, your developers can easily create custom video experiences tailored to your business. Enhance every conversation with live video, whether it's delivering faster tech support, improving customer service, or enabling interactive meetings and events. Unlock the true video potential of your business. Discover how at Vonage.com.
Now the Federal Trade Commission wants to make non-compete agreements illegal. The agency says doing so could help all workers, not just the ones with non-competes. Here's Lauren.
There's a fair amount of studies and research showing that non-competes suppress wages because it's basically like a way to lock a worker into a job. They can't leave for a better wage elsewhere. Their current employer doesn't have to pay them more because they know they can't go anywhere. You know, so it suppresses wages in that way. And the Federal Trade Commission actually said they believe the price tag on that is about $300 billion.
$300 billion yes. in suppressed wages as a result of this?
Yeah, per year.
Per year. And that's because when one person's wages are suppressed because of a non-compete agreement, it reduces pressure on the company to raise the pay of other people that are doing that same job.
Yeah. Also, the fact that a person can't take a job that will help increase their skills in some cases. So you're also missing out on that career development and skill development. I spoke to somebody in Oregon who was an IT consultant, had his own business, but he wanted to take a job that he felt would help him learn some new skills. He'd be working with someone who would be a great mentor, and he wanted to take this job, but they handed him his employment agreement, and it had a one-year non-compete in it, and he wasn't willing to sign it, actually, because in a previous job, he had been let go, like, kind of early on after one of his kids was born, and he just said, like, I don't want to be in a position where I can't work for a year. So he ended up not taking that job. As a result, he lost out on those, you know, that kind of career advancement. So it really does, you know, affect people. One of the other major impacts is on business formation. So if somebody can't leave a company and to start their own business, you know, especially in the same industry, that has a chilling effect on innovation. One of the chief arguments against non-competes is if you look at Silicon Valley.
California is one of three states that has banned non-competes.
Now, there are many reasons why Silicon Valley developed where it did, but a lot of people say one part of that is the fact that non-competes are unenforceable in California. So you had a really smart software programmer who had a great idea, you know, or an engineer, they could go off and start their own business. And so you had this amazing ecosystem of innovation happening there. So there's a lot of arguments out there for why these have some negative economic effects.
So how big of a deal could this be if this FTC proposal gets put into law?
The FTC proposal as it stands now is very, very broad, and a lot of people I've spoken to say they expect to see it narrowed somewhat. You know, it will probably be a lot of lobbying by business organizations. The Chamber of Commerce has already said that they feel the FTC overreached.
The U.S. Chamber of Commerce is the country's largest group representing businesses. It said it might sue the FTC because it doesn't believe the agency has the authority to make a rule like this.
But if this or even a modified version goes into effect, it should free up a lot more mobility. Now, this is a moment where companies are already really worried about mobility, you know, because we've come through what many have called the Great Resignation. A lot of people have been quitting their jobs and going elsewhere in the last couple of years. Rates of quitting are still elevated. So this could add to or workers, you know, rights to move more among jobs. That's very good for them individually. There's a lot of arguments that that's good for the economy, but it's going to make companies very nervous.
How might it affect businesses if this rule gets passed? Because there are, legitimate reasons that businesses do want these non-competes. If there are workers that do have very sensitive information, they don't want them taking that to a competitor. So what could it mean for them?
Right. I mean, it would be a mixed bag for companies. There are regulations already that should be prohibiting people from stealing trade secrets or confidential information. There's intellectual property laws. There's trade secret laws. You can put a non-solicitation agreement in an employment contract, which says you can't, you know, solicit your former customers if you go to a new job. So they have access to those laws that they can use. But, you know, and I will say the other thing is there are trade-offs for companies that rely on non-competes in that it may help them hold on to their talent, but if their competitors are also imposing non-competes, that makes it harder for them to hire. So if there are no non-competes, the idea hopefully is they'll actually be able to hire people and have more access to talent from other companies. One piece of this is they might have to have new ways of retaining people or better ways of retaining people. You know, if you can't use sort of like a cage or handcuffs to keep someone at the job, maybe you have to make the job more attractive, or, you know, you can use things like compensation.
Maybe you'll have to add snacks.
Snacks. I'm not sure how many people that really, you know, keeps them on the job, but, you know, you could do stock options, stock-based compensation where they vest after 3 years. You know, there's different ways of structuring compensation and benefits and things like that to make a job more attractive and appealing.
That's all for today, Friday, January 13th. The Journal is a co-production of Gimlet and The Wall Street Journal. Additional reporting in this episode by Dave Michaels. Your hosts are Kate Linebaugh and me, Ryan Knudsen. The show's produced by Annie Baxter, Ariana Bowe, Catherine Brewer, Maria Byrne, Pia Gadkari, Rachel Humphreys, Matt Kwong, Annie Minoff, Laura Morris, Afif Nasuli, Enrique Perez de la Rosa, Sarah Platt, Alan Rodriguez Espinosa, Pierce Singhi, Jivika Verma, Lisa Wang, and Catherine Whalen, with help from Jonathan Sanders. Our engineers are Griffin Tanner, Nathan Singapak, and Peter Leonard. Our theme music is by So Wiley. Additional music this week from Catherine Anderson, Peter Leonard, Bobby Lord, Emma Munger, Nathan Singapak, and Blue Dot Sessions. Fact-checking by Nicole Pasolka. Thanks for listening. We're off Monday for Martin Luther King Day. See you on Tuesday.